You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Is up, everybody. Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And Pete is not here this week, but we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram. Maybe you're listening later wherever you get your podcasts. If you are, you can get ad-free versions of this podcast and all the podcasts we make at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Please do check it out. And we got an awesome show for you. Regardless of whether Pete is here or not, doesn't really matter. He's actually in, what's the name of the town he's in?
It's like Ska Mania, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like he's lying and he's at a ska festival, but
yeah. Let's say he's just he's out there bringing back ska in Washington. Mr. LePage goes to Washington State.
This is a huge thing. The Mighty Mighty Boston's actually broke up in 2022, but they're back together. Pete brought them together at Ska Mania, yeah. So check it out.
Yeah, that's definitely the part of the Pete legend we're trying to build up.
Well, why don't we bring in our first guest who already has a legend that doesn't need to be built up. That's what you said, right? I got this.
Yeah, good. Right. Yeah. Alex, when you're always juggling, you're the kind of juggler that describes where their balls are at any time in the air. I'm juggling three balls. One goes up, one goes down. One goes up, one goes down. That's juggling.
You've been to the circus recently.
I love a vocal juggler.
Well, he is the creator of, among other things, Gargoyles Demona, as well as Spectacular Spider-Man. He's the writer of that. Ladies and gentlemen, Greg Weisman. Greg, welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Excited to have you on the show. Excited to talk about this. Why don't we start with Gargoyles Demona? So this is, I believe the way Dynamite is sounding, because this is the first titular spinoff of a character from the Gargoyles franchise. We got a free Comic Book Day special. The series is going to kick off proper May 28th. Why was Demona, I mean, this is like the most basic question possible, but why was Demona the right character to spin off into her own series?
Well, I guess there's two levels of answer to that. One is pragmatic, I think, and one is, I guess, more theoretical. I think of all the characters in Gargoyles, except for Goliath, who's always going to kind of be heading up the main series anyway. The character who's sort of broken out the most is probably Demona. There are a lot of other characters that are great who I'd love to do spinoffs for, but it does make some sense to me that she's an extremely popular character, an incredibly complex character, with so many layers to her that it makes some sense to me that she would be the first. Pragmatically, I produced Gargoyles. I created the show and produced it, 30 years ago with Frank Parr. So Frank and I were co-supervising producers of the show. We were co-showrunners of the show. And Frank came to me after I'd been doing comics first with SLG and then with Dynamite for the last couple of years for Gargoyles. He came to me and said, hey, what if you and I did something together that focused on Demona during that 1,000 years when our lead Gargoyles, our heroes, so to speak, were frozen in stone by a magic spell for 1,000 years. Demona was banging around the world just trying to survive, getting more and more embittered as she did it.
Yeah.
So what if we did something there? So that happened to dovetail with conversations I'd had with Dynamite and conversations Dynamite had had with Disney. I have a timeline for the whole Gargoyles universe, which is over 400 pages long and counting.
Oh my God.
And so I have certain tent poles, things I know that happened at different points. That doesn't mean they're full stories, like completely written out, but I sort of know this happens there. So Frank and I sat down and we looked at that 1,000 years. And there's no way in a 5-issue miniseries we're going to cover 1,000 years worth of content. But we decided to do 5 sort of snapshots from the first couple hundred years of Damona's travels. And some of those are tentpole stories that I already had in mind. Others fit between the tentpoles. But they're all, I think, really interesting. They're all very different. They've all got their own mood, their own feel. Each is set in a different year. Each is set in a different location. Each is even a different genre. So issue 1 is historical fiction. That comes out, as you mentioned, May 28th. And then issue 2 is sort of swashbuckling adventure. Issue 3 is a horror story. Issue 4 is a mystery story. And issue 5 is an elegy. So we've got... Wow. A different tone, a different feel to each of these stories. They're all pretty self-contained, but there's a through line that runs through them, sort of personified in the character of Damona's foster daughter, Angelica. And so I think it's a really interesting series. Frank is turning out some truly gorgeous artwork. I mean, just, yeah. You know, there's Frank's work there now on screen. Plus, we have other great cover artists, but Frank's stuff is just stunning in this book. And if you saw Damona Zero, which came out on Free Comic Book Day, you've got a taste of it. And it's colored by Robbie Bavard, who colored many of our SLG issues, lettered by Jeff Eichelberry, who's been our letterer at Dynamite from day one, and edited by Nate Cosby. So it feels a little bit like an all-star team brought together to do this series. And it's just been great fun for me and Frank to be working together again on Gargoyles. It's about as good as it gets.
Now, you mentioned the 400-page tome of the Gargoyles history, and I got to credit you with doing maybe the most efficient mythology building of anything in my lifetime that I've watched, where you had, for so long, the Gargoyles were like, let's travel on a boat through time and hit everything. We're going to just hit stuff that's fun. So now, where do you come in? Like, what... Do you have like a punch list of like, these are the 10 areas that I want to touch on? These are how much of your tome have we not seen anything of yet?
A huge portion of it. I have lots of stories that I want to tell. And every time I write a new Gargoyles story, it gives me the idea for 4 or 5 more stories. So I'm constantly adding to that timeline. It's, it's more than 400 pages. It's not quite 500. I don't remember off the top of my head exactly how many pages it is, but it's somewhere between 400 and 500 pages long, and it's constantly growing. So every time I complete a story, I add the details of that story to the timeline. But as I said, every time I complete a story, I also get ideas for a handful more, and I add those to the timeline. And so it's a living, growing document all the time. On this series, as I said, you know, Frank and I sort of settled on 5 stories that take place over the first couple hundred years of Damona's 1,000-year journey. But, you know, we started doing the miniseries before Dynamite came to us and said, hey, good news, Damona's going to be doing Free Comic Book Day. And we need a story that's part of that. So we came up with sort of after the fact, this sort of, well, not sort of, this sort of prologue. I keep saying sort of. I can't seem to stop myself.
It's not stuck in your head.
It is a prologue to this miniseries. It's set in the present, which for Gargoyles is 1997. And really sort of tease up some of the important themes and things you'll be seeing in the five issues of the actual miniseries.
I'm a huge Gargoyles fan, if I haven't made that clear yet. It was the first cartoon I watched with my kids, who you may hear in the other room. And what do you think it is about Gargoyles that sort of endures, or like that new generations of people keep finding?
I think there are a lot of things. I mean, I think the themes are both timeless and immediate. If anything, themes of don't judge a book by its cover, themes of walking a mile in another person's shoes, themes of empathy, which were always a part of Gargoyles, are, if anything, more relevant now than they even were in the 90s when we first did them. I think that it also comes down to, a couple hundred extremely talented people who are really passionate about the project, including Frank and myself, but not at all limited to Frank and myself, who decided right at the top of myself, Frank, our other producers, Dennis Woodyard and Bob Klein, our writers and story editors, Michael Reeves, Gary Sperling, Bryn Chandler Reeves, Carrie Bates, Lydia Morano. Right out of the gate, we decided we were going to do the kind of show that we wanted to see. And then cross our fingers that the audience would want to see it too. But we felt, I still feel on everything I do, but especially Gargoyles, that if I'm not passionate about it, how can I expect any reader of the comic book or any viewer of the animated series to be passionate about it? If I'm just hacking it out, if I'm just trying to guess what is it that the viewer wants to see or the reader wants to read, but I don't have any skin in the game, so to speak, then I think that shows in the work. And you're better off just doing what you love and hoping that the audience comes with you than trying to guess at what they want and maybe hitting, but more likely missing. And even if you hit, there's something kind of hollow about that. And that's been my rule of thumb since Gargoyles, even before Gargoyles, and it's served me fairly well. I'm not saying that everybody loves everything I do. I don't expect that or need that. But it, in general, we've got some pretty amazing fandom with Gargoyles. Last July in Minneapolis, we celebrated. We had a big celebration of Gargoyles' 30th anniversary. I was there. Bunch of our voice actors were there, including Keith David, who played Goliath, Bridget Bacco, who played Angela, Tom Adcox, who played Lexington, and Zara Fuzzle, who is the voice of Scheherazade. We had just a pretty stellar group of professionals there, and then a huge turnout from fans, both old fans, some fans I've known for 20 plus years, and I'm now friends with, and new people who've only started, knowing about Gargoyles from the Dynamite titles or from watching it recently on Disney Plus. And you talk about watching it with your kids. Well, 30 years ago, I was, or maybe 28 or so, I was watching my kids, and I think that's another thing that has made it sort of live on, is that there's stuff there for kids. There are colorful monsters flying around the city, but there's also and explosions and all sorts of cool sci-fi or fantasy elements to it, but there's also real emotion and real heart and Shakespeare and mythology and all this stuff for older kids, for teens, tweens, adults, ancient geeks like myself, and I think that's made the show pretty timeless. In fact, if you watch the show now, the only thing that even gives away that it's set in the 90s is the cell phones.
Yeah.
Either the lack thereof or the fact that occasionally David Xanatos will pull out a cell phone the size of a brick.
He's got the Zach Morris cell phone.
Yeah, you know, with a giant antenna sticking out of the top.
I mean, but, on that note, do you ever get upset that the gargoyles will never get to see The Matrix because that's about like 2 years off?
You know, I've been advancing it slowly, very slowly.
Yeah, they're huge fans of The Matrix now.
Started in 94, and we're up and ended. The TV show ended in 96. We're at 97 now. And when we get back to the main thing, we'll cross over into 98. I'm in no hurry to move through the years.
You'll stay there. It's nice in the 90s.
If you want, this is just an idea. You could have them pick up a copy of Variety and be like, huh, Keanu Reeves is going to be in a new movie in 2 years. Just really tee it up.
Really good. Alex really pushing the Matrix.
I think Keanu needs my help. So yeah. I think we're good.
I do want to ask you, though.
One last thing before, and then you can go, Alex. I grew up.
All of my questions are about The Matrix, so go.
Yes, no, it seems that way. That's why I'm trying to give a little space between your Matrix and Matrix Revolutions question or whatever. I grew up in the country. Now I live in New York, and I've been bringing like gargoyle statues up anytime I'm in a skyscraper. So I'll keep you posted if any of them start to move or come alive.
I appreciate that.
Oh, was that your actual?
Yeah, that's my statement.
Right. Statement of intent. I mean, not exactly the flip side, but like kind of on the flip side of what you're saying. Obviously, you've been doing this, like you said, for 3 decades and living in this story in various aspects with breaks in the middle there. But from animation to taking it to comic books, obviously also very different medium. You've been doing the comic books for a while here, but what have the different challenges been in terms of executing this story in the comic book medium?
Yeah, it's a good question. The fundamentals of it are the same. This is a bunch of index cards. Your audio.
No, just click them together. They love the tactile. Yeah.
This, in essence, is Demona issue 3, which I'm scripting. I was scripting right up until I clicked on to join this podcast. and how I work in television and in comics is the same in the sense that I get a bunch of index cards on a bulletin board or on a big table. I move them around until it starts to gel for me, and I put them in order. Then I transcribe that, and then I make a script out of that. And that basic, very high-tech system is the same across whatever medium. I've done novels that way. But when it comes to breaking these things down, I've learned things over the years. One of the things is that, and you have to keep in mind, I actually started in comic books doing Captain Atom in the 80s, long before I wrote any television episodes. But I spent a lot of years doing television, and television has a 3-act structure. A half hour episode of Gargoyles in particular really does, because you got an act 1 commercial break, act 2 commercial break, act 3 end credits, right? So, and Gargoyles itself is an incredibly dense show. I mean, we pack as much content into that 22 minutes minus 8 minutes of commercials of the half hour as we possibly could. And what I learned early on back on the SLG books in 2007, 2006, whenever I did those books, is that it takes about 3 issues to cover that much material. And when I started doing Gargoyles again, even at the very beginning of the Dynamite run, I was kind of locked into that 3 issues, with each issue being an act of an episode. And I was very much doing a television structure translated into comics. And I quickly began to realize that that wasn't either necessary or really ideal. And I started thinking in terms of unit of measure. And the unit of measure for television is an act. At least it was back in those days when we had commercial breaks, because what's essential is at the end of each act, you've ended with something intriguing enough or a cliffhanger or exciting or whatever, a mystery that makes people want to wait through the commercials and stick with your show and not go away. That matters less in streaming. But even at the end of an episode, you know, you want enough, even if you've resolved the story, you want enough that's fascinating about what you've just watched that they'll come back for the next episode or keep right on viewing if they're binging, right? So that's the unit of measure that I always worked on in television, is that act, right? But in comics, the unit of measure is very different, and it's a page. It's one page, because you need them to keep turning the page. And so now when I think about breaking a story, I don't worry about, oh, this has to be act one and it'll be one issue and act two will be another. I think about each page telling its own little story with a beginning, middle, and end. And the end may be, again, it's just something intriguing, just something that catches your interest. It may be a flat out cliffhanger. It could be a lot of different resolutions, most of which don't resolve. They make you want to turn the page. But each page has to tell its own story. And that's become the unit of measure I use in writing comic books. And that's a contrast, obviously, from how I've worked in television for the past, 30 years.
Yeah, it's a lot more setup and payoff then. Constant, really.
Not necessarily more setup, but just because you want it to flow. But you just want to make sure that each page has its unique sort of storytelling feel to it, has a beginning, middle, and end to it. And that, in essence, in this age of streaming on television, that's now become the sequence. You know, you set something in a character's house. As long as you're in their kitchen, that's one sequence. Then if they run into the bedroom, that's another sequence. And so you start thinking in terms of that a little more and less about acts. But it still comes down to the same thing. You want to keep them viewing. You want to keep them reading. And each little portion of it has to be its own story and has to work in that way to keep everyone moving on it.
Yeah.
You mentioned a lot about the era in which Gargoyles takes place. If you were starting it right now, if you were like pitching it, just developing the story right now, what would be different if they were, if the Gargoyles were in 2025?
I mean, one thing, not to interrupt, but they would have seen The Matrix.
They would have seen The Matrix. I guess that's a big one. Don't take his answer.
Oh, sorry.
You know, I mean, the short answer is not much. I mean, the biggest thing, I was sort of joking before, but the fact is the biggest thing that's changed is cell phones. And that would quickly become a part of the architecture of how Goliath communicates with Elisa or whatever. You know, Goliath's big taloned hands aren't really designed to use a cell phone. But, you know, somehow they adapt, because adapting to current situation was also a big theme of the show. But, you know, even that I think is pretty superficial. I think, again, what we did was wound up being pretty timeless, because what it's really just about is the characters, and the characters drive the story always. You know, when I say that I write a story and I come up with three or four more ideas, they're not like generic, oh, I could do this. It's because the characters are telling me, this is what I'm going to do next. Or this is what I did that set up what you just told. So some of the ideas are in the past, some are in the present, some are in the future, but they're just constantly, the characters are very, very real to me. And they tell me what they want to do. It's when Gargoyles is really working well, which is frankly most of the time for me, it sometimes really feels like I'm not writing it. I'm tapping into the Gargoyles universe that's out there and just transcribing what happened.
Wow.
Because, you know, we keep running into these things where it's like, oh, of course this has got to be the answer to the question that, you know, that we were pondering, or it just seems so perfect and it fits together so nicely, even with real facts, you know. I'm constantly doing research about things that actually happen and then weaving those things into the Gargoyles universe. And that's definitely the case with this Demona series, where we're weaving in actual history, public domain literature, all sorts of little tidbits from all over the place. And it all seems to somehow fit together perfectly, almost as if, oh yeah, that must be how it went over in the Gargoyles universe.
Well, speaking of universes, I did want to bring up at the end of the Free Comic Book Day special, after the Demona story, you had a tease, I think it was a 4-pager, maybe a 6-pager, where the Gargoyles run into the Fantastic Four. Yep. What I loved about this, and I don't know if this, you can tell me if this is the same thing in the comic proper, but Gargoyles are kind of flying along. For anybody who hasn't seen this, Gargoyles are flying along. They see the Flame Four. They're like, oh, where's that coming from? The Baxter Building. And then they encounter the Fantastic Four. And as a longtime comic book fan, what I loved about that is we're not having to deal with any of the business of like, here's a portal. Yeah. How did the portal get here? Let's go yeah. through the portal. Let's get together. Yeah. It's just, they're in the same universe. Let's go.
Yeah. We had a discussion, myself and Michelle, who's my editor at Marvel, and Nate, who's my editor at Dynamite, because they came to us. They were like, hey, do you want to do a crossover with Marvel characters? And I'm like, yeah.
Sounds good. Interesting.
My initial thought, because I'm writing Spectacular Spider-Man, and by the way, issue 15 comes out on May 14th. Which for us is tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
I don't know if you're listening to this, but as we record, this is tomorrow. I was like, let's do Spider-Man and Gargoyles. And they're like, oh, you can't do Spider-Man. And I'm like, okay, what do you want me to do? And I guess I'd written in a couple issues of Spectacular, I'd written.
It's so funny, Marvel being like, would you like to do, oh no, just this, we want you to do this one thing, actually.
Well,
sampled from the buffet of Fantastic Four.
Yeah, I'd done Ben and Johnny as guest characters in Spectacular in a couple issues, and I guess people thought I did an okay, or at least not, you know, disastrous job writing the two characters, because then Tom Brevoort gave me an 11-page story to write for this Fantastic Four anthology that's coming out soon. I don't know when, but soon. And I guess I didn't screw that up either. So they sort of said, well, he seems to know how to write the FF, so let's put Gargoyles with the FF, and that'll work because we've got a movie coming out and that kind of thing. And I'm like, great. So, and I do think it works thematically, because Fantastic Four are the first family of the Marvel Universe, and the Manhattan Clan is the first family of the Gargoyles Universe, which, Justin, as you noted, over time just got bigger and bigger and
got
bigger,
big.
More and more. Yeah. Heroes and characters in it. And so it made sense to me to sort of bring these two first families together. They're both based in New York. The Gargoyles are at Castle Wyvern, which is atop the Erie Building on Central Park South. And the Baxter Building is somewhere in Midtown Manhattan. I'm not exactly sure where. Somewhere on Madison Avenue, I assume, because that's where Marvel was back then. So that just made a lot of sense to me. So we did this little preview, 4-page story nugget, barely, in Demona Zero. And then we're doing two books this fall. Marvel, I mean, I've written the scripts already and the art's being done on both.
Awesome.
Marvel is doing the Fantastic Four meets the Gargoyles. And then Dynamite's doing the Gargoyles meets the Fantastic Four.
Oh, that's awesome.
These two stories and the little nugget in Demona Zero are all in continuity with each other. They're not part of Marvel's 616 continuity, though I'm trying as much as possible to be consistent with that. And they're not part of the main Gargoyles universe continuity because obviously the Fantastic Four don't exist in that. But again, I'm trying to be consistent with the characters. So and they're little sort of gargoyle nuggets in these stories that hinted things that might come someday in the actual Gargoyles universe, sort of Easter egg kind of stuff. They're in continuity with each other, but mostly it's just, hey, let's have fun with it. If Batman can meet the Ninja Turtles, then why the hell can't the Gargoyles?
And we're ready for that. We don't need to do all the work.
I don't need to put them through a portal and make this a part
of the
fun
stuff.
We're doing this. We're just doing it.
And after like 5 years of MCU movies that's mostly scaffolding, I think everyone's learned the lesson like, let's just do the fun part again.
Yeah.
How about
I know we're going to have to let you go in a second, but I did want to bring up one comment here from Twitch. Bad Guy says, really enjoying Spectacular Spider-Man and hope Elementary gets to stick around.
Me too. I'm enjoying it, and I hope Elementary gets to stick around. I hope we're having fun with that. Spectacular 15, which comes out tomorrow, is the last issue of the series, unfortunately. I'm really proud of the 15 issues. I really wish it had sold a little better so we got to go beyond 15. Marvel is sort of, Nick Lowe, my editor, said that for a secondary Spider-Man title, 15 issues is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did comics in the 80s, and to me, 15 issues is nothing. I'm not that impressed with the length of the run, but I'm very impressed with the great art we got on the run and really happy with the stories we told. And I love the character of Elementary. And so I hope that myself or others get to use the character and keep her alive. I know I'm not really worried about Miles or Pete sticking around. I think they may have legs, those two. But it's been terrific fun doing the book. I hope I get another shot at these characters again.
Well, it is awesome that you got 15 issues of it. And if I had read it, I would say it was a great finale, but reviews are embargoed to tomorrow, so I won't say anything about that.
Yeah, that's a secret.
That's a secret for just us here on the stream. I will say, though, so you have Gargoyles Demona is coming out May 28th, like we said, Gargoyles Fantastic Four and Fantastic Four Gargoyles later this year, Spectacular Spider-Man tomorrow. So that's a bunch of stuff. But is there anything else you want to plug before we let you go?
You know, there's other stuff going on, but it hasn't been announced yet. And I got, all sorts of NDAs and stuff, and I just am not allowed to talk about it. So,
so describe right now, the NDAs though. How are the NDAs? Like pretty intense, like very,
they're, all pretty standard actually.
Yeah. Good. That's actually pretty good. You don't want an extra long NDA. That's where you know something's up.
I signed another one today that was less than 2 pages. I was kind of impressed.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That it was as short as it was, but,
Greg, congratulations on everything. Really looking forward to more of Demona. Looking forward to the Gargoyles Fantastic Four. Hope we get, well, we'll see whatever the additional work is from you. Very excited about that.
And, yeah.
Take or leave the Variety Matrix idea. Pressure.
Really good.
No pressure. Thanks, Greg.
All right. Thank you.
Later, Greg. Love your work. Have a good one.
All right, there we go. Once again, I know I just mentioned this, but Gargoyles
Demona. Matrix streaming on. Oh, no. So is that what? Sorry, I don't want to take your.
No, Gargoyles Demona is coming out May 28th from Dynamite. Gargoyles Fantastic Four and Fantastic Four Gargoyles, as we mentioned later on in the year. Spectacular Spider-Man is the new thing. Last issue comes out tomorrow from Marvel. The other title he was referring to was Fantastic Four Fanfare. I don't know when the new issue of that is coming out, but that is a very fun anthology.
So. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if he's in the next issue or what it is, but we love the first issue.
Check out all of that stuff, and we got another great guest for you all this evening. He is the creator behind Dark Regards from Oni Press. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Hill. Oop. What just happened? I missed it. There we go. And Dave Hill!
There he
is. Hit the right button this time.
Hey there. Hey, Justin.
Dave! Great to see you. It's been a bit.
It has. Oh, my gosh.
I grew a beard since last time I saw you. What do you think?
I know. I like it. It really threw me.
Oh,
way
good.
Off. No.
I like to keep you guessing. I've always liked to keep you guessing. But yes. Don't worry. I have my comedy knockout trophy right here. So you can see that if that reminds you of our time together.
I'm pretty sure mine is in the next. Well, you know, I got several of them.
In your trophy case. You definitely. I've seen you win all of them.
New York comedy insider baseball aside,
yes,
Dave.
Sorry.
No,
yes.
That's great. I love it. Dave, you are the writer of a new comic book called Dark Regards, which is based on a true story from your life. It has art by Artyom Topalin. You know the art is good because art is in his first name, and in fact it is.
Yes.
But this is based on a wild story that I believe you previously told on NPR, if I'm getting that correctly.
I told it on Malcolm Gladwell's Broken Record podcast.
That he loves Satan.
Yes.
Well, he's a ground floor Witch Taint fan, which is the band in my fictional band that, you know, the whole thing with Dark Regards, the origin of it is like in like 2004, 2005, just for fun, I started emailing. There was this black metal website that had a contact page for all like a bunch of bands, and I just one night, just completely for my own enjoyment, never intending anyone to ever see it, I just went one by one, and I would be like, "Hey, what's up, Black Witchery?" That would be a band, and you know, like, "Hey, is there another band called Black Witchery? Because I got your record, and it." You know, I was told that it was really extreme, you know, stuff, but I got this total pussy music instead. Like, is there another band I should be checking out? Like, just dumb.
I love that it's you're privately trolling, like email. This is not public in any way. You're just literally.
It was never intended. Truly never. It was before anyone even, you know, was using the term trolling. I was like, I was truly just like, oh, it's 11 o'clock. I'm going to fire off a few emails before I go to bed. And I just went down the list and the bands either didn't write back or they were just like, fuck you or whatever. And sorry for my language.
No, it's get great.
It.
We love
but,
it.
But one, I ended up being the record label of this band, Mysticum. In Oslo, and I was basically saying, you can actually read the entire original email thread at the blackmetaldialogues.com, which is, that's kind of the origin of the whole comic book. I mean, you don't have to have read the emails to enjoy the comic, but there's emails in Dark Regards that are verbatim from the actual real conversation.
Yeah.
Not to interrupt, but to give anybody just the very broad overview of the story, and I'm sure I'm getting some details wrong, but you started trolling with these emails, essentially created a fake black metal band called Witch Taint, that ... there was a nuclear threat against a small town in the middle of America. Is that sort of the end result of something?
Well, what you're referring to, I mean, it's sort of there's a lot of hyperbole and whatnot in Dark Regards, but yeah, that's the gist of it is, you know, I made up this teenager named Lance who is the king of black metal, and he had this band Witch Taint, and again, that Witch Taint was just like, I really don't like to give myself much credit for anything, but I will say that I believe Witch Taint is the best band name of all time.
Yeah.
And it just came to me like as quickly as I was typing it. Like it was as if, like, of course, my band Witch Taint. It just came to me as I was writing. And it's, but it truly, like, it was never, like, I ended up showing it, like, this is even before, like, black metal. Like, now it's, you know, so, like, in pop culture and all that.
Right.
Corpse Paint and all that and, like, memes. But this was before any of that. So, like, I didn't think anyone would even know what I was talking about. So I didn't. I was like, why would I show this to anyone? Because it's so obscure. But I had two friends who were into black metal. My friend John Kimbrough here in New York and my friend David Jaffrey in L.A. And I would send them the emails every week. Like, you know, this was the exchange. Well, like, I was like, this is the back and forth from this week.
What is the volume? Sorry, can you tell us the volume of emails that you're sending and getting in response?
Is it like... It was like a couple a week for like 6 months, maybe.
That's so much. I mean, emailing.
It would trail off, like, and you know, it was. I mean, it was. It like I'd email him, and then I would just like, you know, take a while to respond. He'd take a while, and like, and then eventually, you know, he was like, "Well, if your band's so great, you know, send me a demo." And so I recorded this horrible song with my friend John in like 20 minutes. Sent it, and the thing about like the emails ended up, my friend David sent it to another one of his buddies, and he wanted to put them on a website. And once they had like run their course, and the guy stopped responding, the emails were like, I wouldn't have wanted people to see them if it were like me making fun of this guy. I think really what's interesting about the emails, aside from them just being funny, I guess, is that he's just really patient with me, and he's dealing with this complete arrogant idiot like for months, and like just, and he eventually you know, it's just like, hey, there's more to life than Satan and stuff like this. So yeah, those emails were the jumping off point. But anyway, so those emails were Malcolm Gladwell was like a big fan when they originally came out like years ago, and so yeah, he ended up having me on the Broken Record podcast, and that's sort of like kind of how, you know, the comic book sort of started to, the idea kind of came about gradually, was shortly after that. And
well I do want to ask you about that before I forget, though. I did want to bring up that every week on the show we have a professional chef down in New Orleans who either curates or creates a cocktail for us. And this week, by the way, his name is Brent Macris. He works at a restaurant called Shift. Everybody should check it out if you're down in New Orleans.
Very fun,
it's
down
awesome.
In Nolan.
But this week he created a cocktail for you, which is not that. That's a page from Gargoyles. I'm having a real problem.
Good. Are you all right? You know how this works?
I don't know. This is my first show. Dark Regards, Dave Hill is the name of the cocktail. It is dark rum, Aperol, maraschino liqueur, burnt orange juice, absinthe, maraschino, burnt orange peel, and he doesn't say it here, but I assume putting blood in it is optional if you want, but seems like a great cocktail. That,
burnt orange juice is an interesting ingredient. That's hard to...
Burnt, I'm going to have to make this. This is amazing.
Yeah. It's good. I love the two drops of absinthe. That's the liquor blood.
Yes. Oh, that's amazing. Oh, well, tell him I said thank you. I can't wait. Interest of full disclosure, I'm very hungover right now, so I won't have one tonight.
This is the best time to have one, then.
I know, you're right.
Yeah,
actually,
really set it straight.
I think I'm missing a couple of those ingredients. I'm out of burnt orange
really?
Juice.
All right.
But I'll get it.
Yeah, that's how you start your day.
Right here. I have all of it. But let's get back and talk about the comic book, because obviously this is Comic Book Club.
DC High Volume, Batman. The Dark Knight's definitive DC comic stories, adapted directly for audio for the very first time.
Fear. I have to make them afraid.
He's got a motorcycle. Get after him or I'll have you shot.
You mean blow up the building?
From this moment on, none of you are safe.
New episodes every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
We should talk about that. It seems like such a big leap to go from, I had these emails, I made this story, I talked to Malcolm Gladwell about it, .. Not nuclear threat this time, but comic book. So why was comic book right?
Why was comic book?
I think, because you know, just like the ability to do anything, you know, you can do anything in a comic book, which is, you know, what was the fun of it, is just like there's one. That's one of the variant covers.
I love that.
Based on Judas Priest screaming for vengeance. I actually have a bunch of them. We did a blood variant, which I drew that cover. I don't know if they showed you that one.
Oh yeah, wait.
No,
but I think I heard that one.
This is the cover that I drew.
And wow, Dave, that's really nice.
Oh, thank you. That's kind of just like a. I actually wanted to be like a comic book artist or illustrator at one point in my life, and I got
derailed.
This is really nice. Just other things happen, and so it's kind of amazing to have this book come out, and I was psyched to. I mean, it would take me 20 years to draw a comic, but like
a full comic.
I don't have the chops to do that. So I was so psyched.
Also just mention, you said this is the blood variant. This variant actually does have your blood in it. Hunter Goranson, who is the head of Oni Press, and I'm forgetting the third guy, but you mixed your blood into the
Carl Ballers. Yeah.
Yes.
My editor. Yeah. It's amazing that they were up for it, because, you know, I've written books, like regular books, non-comic books, and none of my publishers have ever offered to let me do a blood variant.
They haven't offered their blood.
Yeah, they
now there's some people at Penguin that like to bleed for their authors. I think
I'm gonna have to bring it up for the next one.
We bleed tonight.
So yeah, and I was psyched that they let me do one of the covers, because I really felt not worthy.
That's so cool.
But I was just psyched that they let me use this insane drawing.
What I love about this book, we got to read it ahead, and it's pretty autobiographical of you. It's not just the black metal stuff. We get to see a little bit of your comedy life in this too.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, it's kind of, a lot of it is just, well, yeah, my life, because it was like right when I was starting comedy, I would kind of, like, escaping into this world of black metal at night, you know, on the internet. And it's just, and so, like, a lot of the people in this are, like, John, who's in it. You know, he's the John who I did the original Witch Taint demo with. The one thing is, like, a lot of the people look nothing like what they look like in real life, because I wanted RDM to just do whatever...
Yeah,
you wanted, like, really the only. I mean, I had some input, you know, with the Dave Hill character.
Nice.
So that resembles me, and then I think, like, I, you know, a couple people, like, I was like, oh, one guy should be like a little younger, and the Tierney character, who's named after my friend Tierney Tough. I use friends' names for some of the characters, and. Yeah, I think I was like, oh, change her hairstyle. But other than that, like, it was so fun to just write it, and then RDM would come up with these amazing images.
It was great. I was in a writer's room with you for like 3 years, and it was great to really get to know you reading this one issue.
Then it was really going on with me.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I mean, to get into that a little bit further, what I thought was really interesting about the book is... it is, like Justin is saying, this autobiography, but at the same time, you're really very much leading into the comedy of it all. Like, it's almost like a Mad Magazine version of your life in a certain way. So how did you strike the balance there? How did you make sure that you were being as true as possible to the true story, but at the same time, making sure the book was funny, which it is?
Oh, thank you. I don't know. I just had fun with it and just, this character is something that's been in my, from the original emails to like, it's just this language is, I don't know, just kind of comes out pretty naturally talking like an idiot. So it just had to write it down. But it was also, it was really cool. Cause I was really into comic books for a while, graphic novels and stuff. And I even like studied, like I took classes with Peter Cooper, if you know him. But I'd never done like a whole comic book. I'd done like one page things. And so to really like learn the format and the rules, to whatever extent there are rules, it was really cool. And like, not to sound like corny, but I was like, oh, I feel like I'm excited to do another one. And then also like, I learned a lot about writing. Like when you kind of like think like what matters in a story, cause like the original story had so much bullshit and stuff. And like even just dialogue, need completely unnecessary stuff. And then, having, however many pages and panels in issue and being like, I have to tell this story. It was, and another thing that really helped is I was touring and doing other things. And so I kind of had to be ruthless, like, because I was like, right. I have to get this done. I don't have, like, I got to, like, get on a plane, whatever. So it kind of helped me, I think, make it better because I was just ruthless about, what went into it and what could go. And like, early drafts would have like every five different people chiming in. And then you realize like, I'll just have this one guy say everything, the story.
We got a couple of things here in the comments that I wanted to bring up. This is from Twitch, Hartford 1988 says, was the Blood Ink inspired by the Kiss comic?
No, why would you say that? No, yeah, completely stolen. Completely stolen. Yeah, the Kiss comic in the 70s, I say this for anyone that doesn't know, Ed Kiss did the Kiss comic book. They allegedly put their blood in it. So
yeah, no way.
We definitely did. So
yeah.
I just have to ask about the process. I know there was a video online, so I probably should have watched it, but like, did you pour the blood over the printing press and let it go into there?
No, we kind of had to be more covert about it because
it's a little unsanitary, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think the more I talk about it, like Oni's gonna get a phone call. But like, no, we did the blood like in a hotel room. It was very
it's good. That's clandestine, man. That's right. Yeah, what you want.
It was in a hotel room we did it, and then just went to the plant and dumped it in.
That has big, like, are we doing this? And then, like, daring each other up and, like, we did it. We actually did it.
Oh, yeah. I didn't really, enjoy it because...
it's the blood.
Again, I mean, I keep going back to having worked with, Penguin and more... just publishers that don't ask you to meet in hotel rooms and draw blood. So I just didn't really think they were serious until I showed up and they're like, all right, your turn.
We'll take four pints, sir.
So it was pretty, it was a fun day. We drove up to the plant and I think I got a salad after. I can't remember.
No,
I got jalapeno poppers.
Oh, so, nice. Right, really reset heftier. The system.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
A lot of your blood is jalapeno poppers. Yeah. So good replenishment. Yeah, and you bump into other writers pouring their blood into other comic books. No,
everyone's doing it. It's like, you know, so we got to up the ante. I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah, similarly, Nat Towson asks on YouTube, do you think Malcolm Gladwell put his blood in any of his books? I'm going to say The Tipping Point for sure.
The Tipping Point is a lot of blood.
It's mostly blood.
Yeah, I have a full-blood edition. There's no ink. It's all blood. He was very dizzy.
Slops out. You take it out.
Yucky.
You got to get it in a bag.
Dave, I feel like you've been touring a ton lately. Can you tell us a little bit about that? It looks pretty awesome online. Yeah, Instagram, anyway.
Oh, it's the illusion of Instagram. No, I've been having a great time. I've been doing my own, you know, headlining touring, but then in the last year and a half, 2 years, I, you know, did a couple of Tenacious D tours, opening for them. And then I did a couple tours with Michael Shannon and Jason Arducci. They and friends who are John Stewart from Wilco, John Worcester from Bob Mould Band, and Doug Julian from Poi Dog Pondering, and Vijay Telesnayak, who's a sweet keyboard player from Chicago. Anyway, they play REM songs. And I opened for them on that tour, doing comedy, but I mix comedy with music.
Just
out of laziness, honestly.
You can write fewer jokes that way.
Yeah, you need half as many jokes, and you just rip guitar solos, and the pictures look cooler.
Opened for Michael Shannon? This is Michael Shannon, the actor?
Who's
music, or does he do selections from Man of Steel?
They do REM. They do REM really? Covers, right? Yeah, why? No. I don't know. Why do they do that?
It started, for fun, Jason and Michael, like, they're both Chicago guys. Like, during the holidays, they would pick an album by an artist and just cover it at a show, you know? And then one year they did Murmur, the first REM album, sold out Metro in Chicago. And then other cities were like, hey, will you come do that show here? So they did a tour. I opened that tour like last year, and that was a shorter
tour.
Cool.
Then
this most recent one was 4 weeks, and they did Fables of the Reconstruction and like two nights in Athens. All the REM guys came out on stage.
That's awesome.
Peter Buck came out in Seattle and Portland. Scott McCoy, who is like the second guitarist live, he came out, you know, from Young Fresh Fellows. He came up in Portland. So it was super fun. And then I've been touring with Bill Murray and his blood brothers lately as well. Bill Murray, the actor.
Yeah. Does he do selections from Man
I've heard
Steel,
of him.
Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does. He does Boardwalk Empire stuff. No. they do mostly covers. Like, it's sort of like Mike Zito is an amazing guitar player and singer, and Albert Castilla, ditto, amazing singer and guitar player. They each have a band, then they merge their bands, and it's called the Blood Brothers. And then when Bill Murray is in, it's Bill Murray and the Blood Brothers. But then Chris Barnes is another, he's a comedy writer.
Barnes and Noble.
Barnes and Noble family, and he is a musician also. And then Jimmy Vivino from Conan's band and a million other awesome things. I've been opening for them, and then they let me come out and play some guitar, rip some solos and stuff. And it's
that's
super fun.
Wild.
And Bill Murray, in anticipation of most people's questions, he's amazing, super nice, great guy. Like, exactly what you would hope, like, just ridiculously nice. Like, the first show I did with them, they were finishing sound check, and I was, like, getting my stuff to put on stage, and he's like, Dave, do you want some help getting your gear up there? I'm like, no, Bill Murray. You don't have to carry my equipment.
You're a comedy legend and pretty old, so don't do this. No. This is not the story I want.
No, he's very, he's agile, virile.
Yeah, well, hitting that stage.
We got a music related question here from the comments. Straight Bullet said, what's Dave's favorite guitar that he owns?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't know. I
you look like you're surrounded by guitars on the ground, I mean, and you're like picking up.
I mean, it's literally, I have like 40. So
that's awesome.
I don't know. I'll tell you, this isn't my favorite, but I think
it's the one in reach.
It's the one. Well, there. I would move, but I stupidly have the blur on. So, but I was going to pan, and you could see like there's just walls covered in guitars around me. But this one I got recently, and
oh, that looks fresh.
Fellow middle-aged men will recognize it as potentially as Warren DeMartini from Rat. Of Round and Round and other hits fame. He's I just always loved him. I still do, and that's like one of his signature models. And I'm a grown man who can do whatever he wants, so I bought it. I'd wanted it like since I was like a teenager, and so I bought it recently. So but yeah, I don't. It's hard to say what my favorite is.
Are you planning on, like, since you are on tour, are you doing anything in conjunction with the comics? Or are you, like, sort of slipping them to Bill Murray? Or
check this out.
I haven't yet. If I may name drop, which I'm clearly a big fan.
I haven't heard you do that yet, so I would love to
I'm a
hear
big
it.
Fan. It's one of my favorite things. I did give a copy of the first issue to Maynard Keenan from Tool today.
Wow. Oh, hell yeah.
That's cool.
That's my comic book name drop. But he's the only celebrity that has it that I'm aware of. but I, you know, it's interesting. Like, this is like, even though like I'm a fan, and like there was a time when I was like super into comics, that like, you know, really into like more like the Daniel Klaus and Peter Bagg stuff. And,
yeah.
And, you know, I still go to like Drawn and Quarterly in Montreal and like load up on shit whenever I'm in town. But I'm also like kind of an outsider, I guess. And I don't really know what, like, I'm going to do some signings. I'm just going to do, I don't know what to, you know, I'm kind of, I'm just like, I don't know what to do, whether I should like, you know, sell them out of the back of a car. I don't have a car.
I think you are.
Yes.
Yes. The answer is yes. I guess, you're in good hands with Odie Press. They know what they're doing. So.
Yeah. I figure they'll just, you know, I'll just trust them. But, I mean, anyone that has you meet them in a hotel room and, you know, draw blood, I just put them in charge. But yeah, I'm going to do like, at like Taylor and Company Books on Friday in Brooklyn. Saturday, I'm in at Forbidden Planet in Manhattan, and then
nice.
I'm doing Forbidden Planet in London next month.
Hmm.
And I'll do some other stuff, I guess.
Awesome. well, the book is great, Dave.
Yeah,
Is there, obviously, people should check you out on tour. Where can they find out information about that?
I'm glad you asked, Alex. On my website, davehillonline.com. And I also post a lot of, too much on Instagram, tour dates and things like that. And all the signing stuff is on there as well. And but yeah, I'm excited. Seems like people like it so far. I'm excited to see what the reaction is. Maybe, I don't know. Or maybe people, they'll be haters, as they say. I don't know. I'm just excited for all of it. All of it. Whatever happens.
Yeah. Whatever happens, it's probably going to sell a lot of copies. You'll have to give more and more blood until there's nothing left.
Yeah, they're drained. So. You're going to be drained.
I hope so. I mean, I hope that becomes a real health liability, this whole
Awesome. Dave, thank you so much for coming on. Congrats on the book.
Thank you so much for having me. And Justin, hopefully I'll see you in person one of these
Love
days.
To see you. Yeah, great
and
to
you,
catch up
you
with
too,
you.
You too, Alex. This isn't a one-sided, you know.
No, cut him out.
Comedy knockout brothers, I get it. Yes. It's all good.
That's right. And you guys all know about that, right, audience?
No explanation. True TV. Necessary.
Yeah, True TV, which used to be a cable network.
Can I just tell the quickest inside baseball comedy knockout story?
Yes.
Just quick, this, and I feel like everyone would appreciate this. Comedy Knockout, a panel comedy show on True TV.
Ran for many, many years.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, so long.
I wish it were on forever. It's like...
Yeah, it was very fun.
So, one day I was singing No Scrubs by TLC in the writer's room. and so fast forward... This is now like 5 years ago. I get a DM from Chili from TLC, and I'm thinking, whom I love.
Yes, no doubt.
And I think this has to be the biggest prank of all time. But I messaged with her. They end up coming to New York. I go to the show. I meet her. I can't figure out how she has any idea who I am. But I can't ask because I'm like, it's not going to be cool if I ask, how do you know who I am? I can't show weakness of any kind.
Yeah, no, not in front of her.
And then when we're talking, she's talking to her friends. She's like, Dave's on this show, Comedy Knockout. And I was, like, what? You watch Comedy Knockout? She's like, yeah, I love it. You're my favorite person on the show. That's why I messaged you.
Yeah, that's...
true story.
That's so funny. Oh, definitely. Right, I can't believe that.
Justin, now what's your story about a famous person who recognized you from comedy?
Well, I was more of a behind the scenes guy.
Oh, okay.
So I was the head writer of that show for, I think, 2 of the seasons.
Yes.
I won this in a test show because I was never on camera in it. But Dave actually won the show for real. I was just off camera all the time.
Yes.
Writing jokes for... Yeah. all these like insane people. My children have decided to enter the conversation. It's also crazy because a lot of the like mediocre guests are now very famous podcasters who have control over our politics. So shouts to Comedy Knockout for that.
I definitely know of one person you're referring to. I guess yes. I'll slip into your DMs to see if you might referring to another one.
There are a couple, but I know the one that you're saying, and that's the one I'm talking about. Great time.
Yeah. Yes, anyway, I thought it, you know, a good comedy knockout story and some good name dropping, which is
yes,
you know,
that's
you know, big fan.
Big Dave, fan. Thank you so much again for coming on. Great seeing you.
Great to see you, bud.
Great night.
Great to see you guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Later.
All right, there we go. Once again, that was Dave Hill. The book is called Dark Regards, and you can check it out tomorrow.
So fun. We didn't talk about the art too much, but the art is fantastic in this book. It's very, like, horror-adjacent, EC Comics. Like, it's really cool. The book, just it's a really nice package.
Well, it's Artyom Toplin's been doing a bunch of the Kyle Starks books, and I feel like it's the perfect match on here as well.
It's funny and like truly metal, so that's a great combo.
And we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments and we will get to it. We'll see what happens. One thing, while we're waiting, I could throw a news item out at you,
please.
Justin. This dropped right before the show. This actually dropped, probably not first, but dropped in general in our Discord, is Jessica Jones, Kristen Ritter, is coming back to Daredevil Born Again. She announced it at the ABC Upfronts, which I heard from some TV people. Basically had nothing to do with ABC this year. It was all Hulu and Disney.
Just Disney.
Yeah, streaming stuff, and that was
it. What do you want to hear from ABC?
They have shows. It's the times they are changing. But what do you think about this? What do you think about Jessica Jones coming back, Justin?
I mean, I was curious because I didn't actually read the article. I just saw the headline. Is it going to be a new series? Are we going to see her just pop up in another show by the name of Daredevil?
Oh, she's going to be on Daredevil.
Yeah.
So cool. I think, like, I don't know. I'm suspicious when they do things like this. They're like, I'm very excited to join this cast. They probably filmed her months ago at this point.
Oh, like, she's a million percent. Yes. Yeah. Her episode is bagged and boarded yes. and ready to go.
So I think she'll, the best case scenario is she shows up in a similar capacity to John Bernthal in the first season, where we get like a good meaty scene and then she shows up to help Daredevil in the finale or something like that. And I assume the hope is they could spit it out into a new Jessica Jones series, would be my guess.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm curious. This is the first real announcement I think we've gotten for this second Daredevil season. But, you know, I feel like we're going to get another one. We'll get some more, I think.
Mm. I don't know if I mentioned it on here, but I live near Greenwood Cemetery, where they film the cemetery scenes for most shows, but definitely yeah. for Daredevil and most of the, like, Netflix Marvel shows. And they were filming Daredevil season 2 over there the other day. So it looks like we're going to get a...
What do you think? That's where Foggy's grave is? Do you feel yeah. like... Whose grave do you think they faked for Foggy's grave?
We know he's coming back, right? Yeah. So I think we finally get that iconic scene from the comics of Matt pissing on Foggy's grave.
Yes. I think that's definitely... I can't wait.
Say this iconic. Because Pete's not here this week.
Yes, that's the only time. So let's get all of our Pete stuff out now. But yes, definitely. That's how the season opens, I believe. It's a real, just a close-up.
Glad you're dead, fucker. We can say that. We're on yeah. Disney Plus now. All right, we got a couple of questions here. This is from Schreikler. What really surprised you about today's Eurovision semifinal? I would say for me that it was happening.
I guess Portugal's showing and making it, right? Is that the right answer?
I don't
know. I'm only saying it because I saw Schreikler post that somewhere else.
Okay. Trey Bullard says, what's your favorite name drop to drop? That's actually, I think, a good question. Like, what is the celebrity story you eat out on?
I mean, it's tough because it's always very crowd dependent. Mm-hmm. On the sort of full public, you got to be a little more careful. You can't tell a negative celeb story, at least not at this young age.
I feel weirder about it now, but in my bio for a very long time, I put he got slapped once by John Cleese, because that's true. That was in college. John Cleese was I think they called him an adjunct professor, but like he came by a couple of times throughout the semester and did workshops, and they were actually very cool. Like we did a bunch of the comedy groups did stuff for him, and also people from the theater department. And he basically like plussed up our stuff, and it was kind of an impactful lesson, because there were little things where he's like, okay, when this person says this line, you bend down and pick up a pen so that you could jump up and react to it physically. And I was like, oh, that's such a smart little thing. Anyway, we were taking a picture with him, and he said something, and I said something snarky back to him, and he was like, oh, ha, 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 and gave me like a little love tap on the cheek, but he's an enormous man, so it was a full-on like
so it really
slap
hurt.
Across the face. That's it. Wow. That's my story.
It's still, you've never washed that cheek.
Never.
Ever since. I guess for me, it would be, I got to write for Tom Hanks once, which was very cool. Danny Glover on the same job was on set. He made the entire crew, including myself, cry, which was wild.
Was he trying to like, he was stuck to the toilet again?
Yeah. He, I say that so casually. Yeah, it keeps happening to him. I don't know what it is. It's like an Easter egg. So that was a good one. I got to direct John McEnroe, the tennis star, for his season of his show. There are others. And get me at a bar after a couple drinks, I'll tell you the real shit.
I agree. Context dependent. Stanley says, have you seen every Mission Impossible movie? Are you a big fan of them? I was going to say this for the Week of Geek, but I actually watched all of the Mission Impossible movies this week.
Oh my God, you maniac. Yeah. What? How does that, which ones are shining for you on a rewatch?
You know, it was actually very interesting rewatching them. One, because they're all the same movie. Like,
yeah, I was going to say.
Watching them back to back, I was like, oh my God, you just like jumbled around a couple of things in the script here and there and added more death-defying stunts for Tom Cruise, but this is the same arc every single movie.
Well, and it is crazy because Christopher McQuarrie, who's been in charge for the last three, including the one that's coming out
four,
this week?
Including four. This new one. Yeah.
He he's like treated like a god level writer, and it's you're like, well, he's doing the same thing over and over again, but every time everyone's like, holy shit, how did you think of this? Put him in more danger? No.
That's crazy. Somebody is going to doubt him and then come over to his side? Okay, doesn't seem right to me.
But I will say, I have watched all of them. I haven't watched the new one yet. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. But this one does, from what I've heard about it, they are paying off shit from all of them.
Yeah.
Like, all of this stuff does amount, and that is not easy. Like, well, the cruciform key and all this shit.
The early word is that part doesn't work at all.
Yeah,
the part
I bet
that does work is like the last 25 to 30 minutes of the movie that is insane stunts. And like, I don't know, that's the only thing anybody remembers from these movies is like, oh yeah, was that the one where he was on top of a train? I love that one. Name like literally any other plot point to the movie, you can't.
No, and because they're what I think is crazy though is Mission Impossible. They're purposefully complex, but it works. Marvel movies for the last 5 years have been purposely complex, but it does work. So I think that's an interesting difference, and I don't know how they pull that off. That's the real magic in these movies, that you remember, you like them as an audience member, and you walk away being like, "That was cool. Here's what's cool about it." The train car was upside down, and Tom Cruise and the other actor like got Haley out
Atwell.
Or whatever. Haley
Captain
Atwell, yeah.
Carter, come on.
Yeah.
Just to answer your question real quick, though, the ones that popped to me, the like maybe three takeaways. One, this is not a controversial take, but like the first Mission Impossible, I'd remembered the wire stunt, and I was like, oh, that's cool. I've seen that a million times parodied now. Watching again, it is still fucking awesome. Like, oh my God, that sequence is like, my heart was pounding even knowing exactly what was going to happen. It's incredible.
I feel like the first one is one of the best of all of them.
It's much
even though it's
slower.
A little outdated. Like it's slower.
Yeah, they pace it like a TV show, so it's very different. The second one is absolute garbage and misogynist.
Famously
in a way
so.
I'd forgotten. Yeah. But the other one that really popped for me is Fallout, which is the one before these two.
Yes. That's this one.
I think that, yes, with Henry Cavill.
And that's
awesome. I think
awesome.
It's the best one. Like,
yeah,
legitimately,
I think you're right.
Like, the arc is good, the story is good, the emotion. Like, they finally brought everything together in that movie, and it's excellent.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Even with the advanced, like, mixed reviews, I'm excited for the next one.
Oh, hell yeah. I can't wait.
Let's see. This is Schreckler. Real audience question. What are some short-lived comics, TV shows, whatever, that you thought had really strong world-building?
Short-lived comics, TV
shows. I'm going to give... This is the first answer that came to mind. I'm sure Schreckler remembers this. I don't know if anybody else does. But there was a TV show called Earth 2. Do you remember that?
Oh, my God. Yes.
I loved that show when it came out. I'm sure it doesn't hold up. But it was basically 20, 30 years before Battlestar Galactica got reinvented, like, I remember having that same sort of feeling from that show where it was a bunch of settlers get stranded on this alien planet and, like, are slowly figuring out the mysteries there. And, again, it was probably, like, 10 or 15 years too early, but it just, like, hit all that mystery stuff.
See, Earth 2 is right next to SeaQuest DSV in my memory. Like, they basically are doing the same exact
shit. 100%.
But one is under the sea.
Yes, SeaQuest, though, I was like, I don't know. What are you going to find there? You're just.
I mean, I will say SeaQuest tried so hard. They were like, actually, under the water we haven't really explored, like space. I was like, we get it. Okay.
We kind of have, though. We kind of
have. Yeah, exactly. We've seen a lot of it. I go swimming in the ocean, so I know a little bit about it. Guys.
Yeah.
Roy Scheider.
Any other?
I mean, I would say the two first kind, and these aren't super short-lived, but Avatar The Last Airbender and Adventure Time are some of the most amazing world-building of an animated show that I've still... I mean, Gargoyles is another one. We talked about it earlier, but like... Not that that was super short-lived either, but the world-building of that show, like, I still think about it, and I love it.
This is from Michael T. Should they bring back all the other Defenders? I think number one, of course, people want Iron Fist to come back 100%. Like, he's got to come back. Finn Jones.
Do not recast, I think, is the biggest.
Yeah, definitely not. No, I don't know. Bring back Mike Coulter. Everybody likes Mike Coulter. He's great as Luke Cage. That would be fun.
Yeah. Well, that's the other one I think that will-ish happen.
Yeah.
I'm like, I think what 70%.
They're going to do, which is going to suck for Finn Jones, is they're going to bring back the ones that everybody likes and leave the other ones to the side.
Hey, got bad news. That's how everything works. Everything.
Here we go. Ooh, controversial. All in the Game says, do you prefer the best Bourne movies or the best MI movies?
Ooh. I mean,
I'd say Mission Impossible. Bourne,
really?
The first movie, that car chased. I just remember like being in the theater and gripping the sides of my seat so hard. There was a point where I was like, oh, I forgot to breathe for like a minute watching this.
And let me say, to the point you made earlier, like, I can remember the story of the first Bourne movie. And the Mission Impossible movies, I'd be like, I don't know if I can remember it. So like there's a case to be made that they did something that really worked. And that opening bit, if I may call it that, of Matt Damon in the ocean, like, that's iconic. That works so well.
I don't remember that at all. I'm sorry. Bourne is actually something that I'm like, I don't remember these movies. I'm sorry. But maybe I'll rewatch them. Maybe that's my follow-up to the Mission Impossible marathon. I guess we'll see what happens. And that is it for your audience questions. Now, normally we go to trivia, but Pete is, I believe, halfway through his 3-hour jam with his band at Ska Mania. Is that?
Yes, his band. Yes.
His band.
Turn
He's
the page.
In, they just brought on, I'm actually watching the feed over here, they just brought on Real Big Fish. That's pretty cool.
Oh, man. Sell out. With me, oh yeah.
Yes. So instead, we're going to go over...
Hold on. We got a comment from Pete LePage himself.
Pete LePage can comment trivia, but he can't come and do the show. Okay,
Pete, sign in on the link if you got trivia.
Yes.
Bring it.
No, I'm sorry. Trivia is actually not the passcode. It's not the exact passcode that I wrote down to unlock trivia on this show. So I don't think we can do it, unfortunately.
Yeah, too bad. Wow, Pete, sorry, you're not invited to this show in your West Coast time.
Yes, but if Pete does want to drop Pete, his if picks.
You feel free to drop in, Pete, from wherever you are, and then for a couple minutes, and then sign off and end the stream immediately.
Pete says, I want to take the secret quiz.
That's an asshole.
We were so close to almost past this, and he just...
He dragged us back.
Pete, Real Big Fish needs you on stage. They're doing a jab with, I can't name another ska band to save my life.
Alex.
No doubt.
I mean, that's on the edge. Pop ska.
Anyway, new comics are coming out tomorrow. Justin, what are you looking forward to?
Well, let me say there's a lot out there. There's a lot of stuff. Before we go to that.
There's a lot of stuff.
Hey, Pete. You got an
Pete, you got to wear headphones.
I don't have any headphones.
Great. How you doing, Pete?
We can't talk then for 1 second.
Yeah, this is terrible.
How you doing, Pete?
We can't talk.
This is terrible. Is this ska? Is that what that is?
Yes, sort of. Sort of.
Is this ska? What are you doing? Pete is holding up some sort of fuzzy bear guy.
At least mute yourself.
Yeah, mute yourself or something. Oh, it's a Bigfoot. Pete is holding up some sort of fuzzy. Do you know there's an echo going on, Pete? This is terrible. This is
he figured it out.
Everything was going so smooth.
Pete, you can hold up signs and communicate with us, like Love Actually. Would be really nice. Pete coming out.
Great. I don't know exactly what's going on. What are you looking forward to that's coming out, Justin?
Great question. Dark Regards number one from our guest Dave Hill. I would shout that out real quick. But there's a lot of interesting stuff. Exquisite Corpses number one, James Tynan book from Image Comics. I'm curious about that. It's a pretty, it's a big book. It feels like a big story, big book. James always doing stuff.
Well, they're doing a big push for it. I know that they have like a playing card game that they're releasing, and there's a whole Exquisite Corpses staff that was working on it. So they're all in on it. So that should be interesting to check out.
Yes, I would also say Uncanny X-Men number 14. We have been maybe a little bit up and down on all of the X books recently, but this one, I think, in this most recent storyline, has really locked into place. Which focusing on the younger students that are hanging out with the Rogue Gambit team in Louisiana. So looking forward to that. And the other one I would say is Phantom Road number 12, a book I've been loving, we've been loving. Took a long break before the previous issue. And the last issue kicked off sort of the arc that explains what's happening. So I'm very curious to hear what's happening.
A couple additional titles that I'm looking forward to. I Was a Fashion School Serial Killer number 2 from Image Comics. The first issue was a really good, very dark, very funny surprise. So I do hope they keep that up in the second issue. The team is great, but they have a tendency to go in like very weird esoteric directions.
Yes.
So fingers crossed it holds on to the more straightforward tone from the first issue. And one that I am... the internet has been going in on already. Gwenpool number 1.
Oh, yes.
This is one they kind of spoiled what's going on in the series. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but there's a controversial thing they're doing in this comic book that I'm curious to see how they execute on, considering I like Gwenpool, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And folks, that is it for this week's show. Couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Greg Weissman for coming on to talk about Gargoyles Demodium. That is coming out May 28th. Also, check out Spectacular Spider-Man. Final issue is on sale tomorrow. Dave Hill for talking about Dark Regards. Excuse me.
That is out tomorrow. Shouts to Dave Hill.
That is out tomorrow from Oni Press, and it is great. Next week on the show, Eric Jorker is going to be here to talk about Naked City, a graphic novel. And we're also going to have Sebastian Gerner and Alejandro Arbona to Don to talk about their new graphic novel, Lake Yellowwood Slaughter. That is a lot of fun. Comic Book Club News, our daily comic book news podcast, Monday through Friday. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Support this show and all the shows we do. ComicBookClubLive.com. For this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Yeah, good night.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.